All right, guys, let's gather back in. Well, it's definitely, if you didn't cover your flowers last night, people are going, oh no, they're not flowering anymore. She's all done. I think it was 29 at my house this morning. It's just part of God's plan. If you're not a fall person, if nothing else, you can take my wife's attitude where she says, I'll just be happy for you, Rob, that you like winter. So, all right, well, we started a series last week. It's called Church, More Than Just a Building, and we're talking about the church. And, it's probably worth asking, well, you know, you look at the church, you look at perhaps the church's place in society or what we kind of perceive the church as, and I think it's easy to kind of look at the church and think, well, it's similar to, you know, other organizations, perhaps, you know, fraternal organizations like the Moose or the Kiwanis or something like that, or maybe organization that is designed to help the community, like the Shriners, perhaps, or maybe it's a social group, or it's something for kids, like Boy Scouts. You know, it's kind of like all of those things. But the reason we're talking about it here is because God says, you know what, this is different than anything else. All of those organizations, the Boy Scouts, the Cub Scouts, the Shriners, the you know, whatever organization, 4-H, the Salvation Army, all of these things, they're great, and they have specific goals. Alcoholics Anonymous, it has a specific goal. All of these organizations are good. They fill a purpose, but the church is a little bit different. And the reason the church is different is because of what God says about it, or what God says the church is. God defines it with some pretty strong words. He says that the church is Jesus' bride. Wow, think about that. God himself, Jesus says, that church, this organization, this thing that's called the church, that's my bride. What does that mean? You think about these pictures. God uses these words because he knows that we understand them, and they help us to understand what's on his heart. You men, think about your bride. Think about when you were a young man getting married. I can remember standing at the front of a church like this, and the doors in the back opened up, and this beautiful red-headed girl started to walk down the aisle toward me. I can remember walking into my wedding and walking out, and nothing in between. Absolutely nothing. Except that girl. That girl coming up, and my heart beat faster for her, and it still does. Hey, that's a picture of what God says he feels when he looks at us. Wow, that's crazy. That's hard to imagine. It says in the Bible that the church is Jesus' body. In other words, he's the head, but we're the body. We accomplish what is important to him. He uses us. We function together with each other and with him as Jesus directs us. He says, you know what? You're my body. You're my hands and my feet. Wow, that's an important thing. I'm pretty aware of my own body. I take care of my own body. Well, Jesus says the church is his body. It's on his mind. It's connected to him in an absolutely intricate way. He says that it's his family. The church is God's family. I watched my three kids walk in this morning. 1, 2, 3. And I picked them out. You know, I can recognize my kids from the back, from the side, in a group of people. You know, I can just kind of glance, oh, there's one of my kids. And parents, you can do that, can't you? You know, you hear their voice and you recognize it. Well, God says that we're like his kids and the church is his family. And so he's aware and he's guiding, he's leading. As the church kind of functions in the world around us, God says, well, I'm aware of you. I see you. I love you. I'm excited about you. He says, we're his flock. He uses a picture that we don't understand probably so much anymore, but the people back then understood. A shepherd knew exactly how many sheep he had, knew exactly the condition of each one, and exerted himself to protect them, to provide for them. Well, God says that's what he does with us. He knows you. He knows every little church all scattered across the country. You know, there's little tiny churches with 15 people in a meeting this morning. And we tend to think about the great big churches, you know, like Elmbrook down in Milwaukee, that maybe today in all of their different campuses, I don't know how many, 4,000, I have no idea how many people are meeting there. God sees both of them. Why? Because the church is his family, and so he sees that great big church meeting down in Milwaukee. He sees that tiny little church out in nowhere, Wisconsin, with 10 people in it, and he's aware and he sees them. Because the church is his family, is his flock. We're his army. God says that, you know what, he has a mission, he's accomplishing something, he's fighting in the world, and we're his army, we're his soldiers, we're his captains, we're the ones that follow him. So the point to that is this: why are we talking about the church? Because it is incredibly important to me, to you, to the world around us, no, to God. It is incredibly important to God, and he uses all of these words to help us to recognize how important it is, his body, his family, his flock, his bride, his army. So that's why we're doing this. And last week we started the series, Jason started it, and he talked about two kind of different aspects of the church. There's the universal church, which means there's Christians, there's people who are part of the church spread all across the world and all across history. This thing called the church has been in existence for, at this point, thousands of years. And there is an unbroken chain of church history that goes way back. And right now, as we speak, there are Christians all across the world, all across the globe. This church is functioning in all kinds of different places, and that's the universal church. And that's real, and it's powerful, and God sees it, and God works with it. But there's also the local church, which is what we're doing right here. There's another one right over there. If you turn around and look, you can see another local church right across the street. What's that? Well, it's small groups of that universal church that get together to do what the church does. And so there are these two distinct things that are a part of each other. Jason talked about that last week. Today, here's what we're going to do. We're going to kind of jump off of that, and we're going to ask this question. Okay, if there's this universal church, this big thing all over the place, why are there so many local churches, and why are they so different? Why so many? Why so different? How do we understand the fact that, okay, if God says that the church, all Christians, are his bride, his family, his body, all of these different words, well, how come there's just so many different little bits of it scattered all over the place is what it seems like. It's like there's just little bits of the church scattered all over the place. In this town, if you drove through town today, you would see all kinds of different local churches, different little bodies of believers, different little things just like this happening. Why is that? Why are there so many? And why are they so different? If you walked into different churches today, you could get all kinds of different experiences. You could get very traditional churches, the churches like I grew up in, a very traditional Lutheran church, very, very liturgical, very, what's the right word? I guess just, you know what I mean, traditional. Hymns, doing the same thing. Is that bad or good or wrong? I don't know. It's just the way they do it. You can get churches like this where, you know what, I'm wearing jeans and white socks. And don't tell my wife that I'm wearing. She was asleep when I got dressed this morning. You'll have churches where it's very excited, very boisterous, very animated. You'll have churches where it's very subdued. You'll just get all kinds of different feels, different things happening. Why is that? Why are there so many different churches, and why are they so different? If the church in general is God's body, God's bride, shouldn't we all be the same? Isn't it all kind of one thing? That's what we're going to look at today, all right? So we're going to try to answer that question. Why are there so many different local churches, and why are those local churches so different? Now, here's what we're going to do to try to help explain that, and I'm going to say something that I don't want you to tune out when I say this, all right? All right? Promise? Look at me. Do you promise that when I say this, you're not going to just shut down and go to sleep? I can't make you promise that, but I just thought I'd make you think it anyhow. Here we go. One of the things that I think we need to do if we're going to answer that question is recognize this. History helps us to understand. History helps us to understand why there are so many churches. Because, there's a verse here in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 says this, history merely repeats itself. It has all been done before. Nothing under the sun is truly new. Sometimes people say, here's something new, but actually it is old. Nothing is ever truly new. It's important for us to recognize that history is a great teacher. And if we want to understand what's going on right now, it really, really helps us to look back in history. And the church has a history that goes back thousands of years. Now, when I say history, that's where I suspect some of you are going, great. We'll try to keep it very, very helpful here and understandable. The reason I think that when I say history, people get a little bit, is because you think of history like this. This is a book. This is volume one. It's called History of the Christian Church. There are 8 volumes. Tom, do you got that picture here? 8 volumes. And people are going, ugh. It's a book with lots and lots of footnotes, lots of small type. I have this set. I like history, and this is a hard read. I'm just going to be honest. It's a really, really hard read. And so we think of history as, oh my gosh, it's this mind-numbingly, terribly dull thing. It's not. History is just stories of people. I found this book. Does this belong to anybody here? It's called Christian History Made Easy. It was... is that where it belongs? I was getting ready to start this message last Tuesday, and it was sitting on the table out there. I thought, God just made this happen for me. He created this book and planted it over there where I could see it. So I read it. 2 days. Lots of pictures. It's really fun. Interesting book. But the point, guys, is that history is a great teacher. And so if we're going to answer the question, why are there so many different churches and why are they so different, it helps us to look back at history. Now, I have a chart here that hopefully you can see. Can you guys read that? That's awfully small. I'm sorry. It's kind of the breakdown of the denominations over the years. Can you guys read that at all? I'm sorry. Yeah, green and there's all kinds of different colors. Let me just kind of tell you. It starts off there, that very, very top one. It says early Christian church. And this is where, you know, you look in the book of Acts. If you're reading the Bible, in the book of Acts, it kind of explains the very first churches. And as you read through the New Testament, you see the book of Corinthians. Well, that was written to a local body of believers, a local church in a town called Corinth. You read the book of Galatians. Well, that was written to a local body of believers in a region called Galatia. Thessalonians was written to the church in Thessalonica, and on and on and on. So there are these different little churches that meet in these different towns. From that, the first kind of structured, kind of organized expression of the church was the Roman Catholics. And for many, many, many years, the Roman Catholic Church was kind of the organized church in the history of the world. And they're still around today. The Roman Catholic Church is still going strong. And the whole idea of the Pope, that goes back thousands of years. And it's really interesting to read about how that all came about. But that was the Roman Catholic Church. The first split, the first difference that we see is over here, it says Eastern Orthodox. There was a time where as the Roman Catholic Church grew, it kind of divided into East and West. There was the Western part, which was centered in Rome, and there was the Eastern part, which was centered in a place called Constantinople, which isn't there anymore. Now it's called Istanbul. Who knows the song? Istanbul was Constantinople. Now, anyhow, Constantinople See, history's fun if you know how to sing. There was a division. The division centered around a couple of things. Believe it or not, one of the big issues was, when do you celebrate Easter? There's a very difference of opinion about that. And there were some other ones where as the church spread, honestly, one of the things that happened was just distance. And you've got people, you know, Rome is here, but Constantinople is way over in Turkey. That's a long way away when you don't have the internet. And so you just have these differences, geographic, and you're just thinking differently. And so you see that, okay, the Eastern Orthodox kind of split off from the Roman Catholic. The Eastern Orthodox Church is still around today. They're still there. Then the one that all of us know about is, if you follow the line down here to the red box, that says Lutheran. And we see back in the 1500s, I believe it was, Martin Luther, in essence, not really, but what happened was there was kind of a rebellion against the Roman Catholic Church. And this whole idea of Protestant, you've heard the term Protestant churches, well, that just means that they were protesting. They were protesting against things they saw in the Catholic Church that they thought, this isn't right, this isn't good. Martin Luther did not start out thinking, I'm going to start my own church. He was a monk. He was part of the Catholic hierarchy, or at least in the organization of the Catholic Church. His goal wasn't to start a new church. His goal was to help reform what he saw as things that were wrong. What ended up happening is we have the whole Protestant Lutheran church movement, and that began just a flood of churches. And I won't go through this. Here's the green one there. It says Anglican, or the Church of England. Over here, the purple one, that's the Reformed Church. And then it goes down. From the Anglican Church, we get the Methodists and the Baptists and the Episcopalians and the Congregational Churches, and all the way down. Over here from the Reformed Churches, we get really where we come from. Just a real quick, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but here at Cedar Creek, we flow from, if you see here, this one says Brethren and Evangelical Free. Our roots are in the Brethren Church, that's kind of where we flow from, and we're very, very, very similar in all kinds of ways to evangelical free churches. So here at Cedar Creek, we kind of came off of this branch over here. But there you go. You see that whole thing. You can find this on the internet if you're interested. I even printed it off here. You can take a look at it. But so we see all of these different things. Now, it's important for us to get a little bit of perspective when we look at that. Because I think when we look at that, well, I don't know what we think. You're like, oh my gosh, there's just, you know, we started off and there are these Christians 2,000 years ago, and now here we are in 2016, and this isn't even close. I mean, you should see some of the charts you can find on the internet. I mean, they're mind-numbing. Just the number of little denominations. As we think about this, and I'm going to get into this in just a second, what we can take from this, but it's important for us to understand something, okay? And hopefully this makes sense to you. I set this up earlier, and I hit it. I asked the band, do you think I should leave this here where every little boy in the church can find it? And they said, no, hide it. So I did. This is not, it's no big deal. It's just a rope with a heavy thing on it, which is what? What would you look at this and think I'm trying to do here? It's a pendulum. There's a couple of things that happen with a pendulum, right? I mean, if it's just, if there's nothing happening to it, if you leave it here long enough, it'll just get absolutely still. But if you kind of take it over here, what happens? Well, it starts to swing, and it goes there, and then it comes back. And it goes there, and it comes back, and it's mesmerizing and hypnotizing. The more you bring it this way, the farther it swings that way, and the longer it'll swing. Every time you put force on this thing, if you move it one way, this could break the television, if you move it one way, it's going to swing back the other way. Pendulums do that. They act in a certain way, and they go up, and then they come back, and they go up, and they come back. But there's something about a pendulum that's important for us to understand. Can somebody take a wild stab at something about a pendulum that we tend not to recognize or focus on? Yeah. When we look at a pendulum, we almost always look at what? The bottom end. Because that's where all the movement is. And it's, wow, look at that thing go, and it's over way over here, and now it's way over there, and now it's coming back again. And which direction is it going? We always tend to focus on this end. But that point there doesn't ever move. A pendulum doesn't work if it's not stuck to something solid. If I unhooked it there, this pendulum wouldn't swing at all. Okay, with that in mind, that helps us to understand and helps us, as we look at history, trying to answer the question, why are there so many different denominations and why are they so different? We have to recognize that it's a pendulum. And over time, what happens is this. As people, we're just individuals trying to understand what God is asking us to do. We're imperfect people. We're different people that have different histories, different backgrounds, different cultures. We all make mistakes. We do some things well, some things poorly. What happens is we try to do church and we kind of move the pendulum in one direction. Inevitably, invariably, what's going to happen is it's going to swing back the other way at some point. And in history, as you look at the Christian church, a lot of this is the swinging back and forth of the pendulum. But it's so important to remember, guys. We can focus, you know, you think about it. Well, okay, what we're doing here is talking about the church, God's family, God's bride. And one group says, this is what God's family, God's bride looks like. And the other one says, no, it's over here. And they're not even close to the same thing. This one's in the dark, behind the corner. This one's way out in the light. This one's better. It's very important, guys, that when you begin to look at the different churches around you, you remember something. Not all of them, most of them are connected to the same point. That's important to recognize. If you're going to understand why there are so many different denominations, we got to be willing to start from the standpoint that we all sprang from the same place. Now, does that mean that all churches out there now, everything that calls itself a Christian church is just fine? No, sometimes we cut the cord. There are some churches that have cut the cord, disconnected themselves from God altogether. That's not true of most of the churches that you see in this town. That's not true of most of the churches you see in this town. So, with that in mind, I want to say this. We're looking at history, trying to help understand, you know, why are there so many, why so different? And let me say this. I think that denominations, these different denominations can spring from some different things. One of them is just a difference of opinion. Denominations can spring from differences of opinion. If you were looking at that chart, there was one over there on our side. It was the Reformed Church. And then what right below it was a church, or a group called the Anabaptists. Anabaptist is not someone's name. Anabaptist. Okay. Anna is Latin for after or secondary. The Anabaptists decided that you get baptized after you get saved, where the Reformed Church at that time practiced infant baptism. Is this a huge major thing? You know what? It was a difference of opinion. It's important. It's not that it doesn't mean anything, but at its core, it was a difference of opinion. A lot of the different denominations that we see really are just springing from, well, we think this, and you think that, and so we're going to practice these things, and we tend to congregate toward the people that we're like. So that's one of the things. Denominations spring from differences of opinion. Here's another one. Denominations spring from differences of emphasis. The Methodist Church, which came off of the Anglican Church, birthed something that you and I would perhaps call the Charismatic Movement or the Pentecostal churches. At the time, it was called the Holiness Movement. And what it was people who emphasized kind of the working of the Holy Spirit in your own personal life. The Methodists got their name because they were methodical. They had systems and structures. And so that pendulum, you know what, that's good. It's fine. The Methodists were, hey, there's certain things you do them a certain way, and they moved it over here. Well, some people said, yeah, okay, fine, but I like the kind of more free-flowing, God just flowing through me. And so the pendulum swung back the other way, and that's where the kind of charismatic movement came from. Differences of emphasis. One emphasizes this thing that's true. Another church emphasizes this thing that's also true. They're both connected to the same point. They're just emphasizing one thing versus another. Denominations spring from differences of opinion, differences of emphasis. Sometimes denominations spring from the need for reform. Something is broken and needs to get changed. The Lutheran Church really sprang from the need for reform. The Catholic Church at that time, there were several things that had been happening over the years. One of the things that was happening is the Pope or the different people could sell indulgences. What this means is that you could go to the priest or the Pope, and if you gave him a certain amount of money or a certain amount of service, he would in essence say, you can sin for this long and you're forgiven. It was out of control. That was one of the things that Martin Luther said, that's not right. And so sometimes denominations spring from the real, very real need for reform. That's an exceedingly brief lesson in church history. But it raises another question. That may briefly explain why there are denominations, but is it good? Is it good? Can you go back to that chart, Tommy? Is that good? Should that be the way that it is? I think that when we look at the church and we think, okay, this is God's family, this is God's bride, this is God's body, in a perfect world, wouldn't we all be one? Is there anything good about all of these denominations? Well, that's a really, really good question. And I'm not going to be able to answer that for you. I'm going to say this. I'm not completely sure that in a perfect world, there wouldn't be denominations. Think about that. I mean, let me rephrase that. I used a double negative in there. I wonder if denominations aren't a good thing. I did it again. You probably know what I'm saying. I'm not sure one way or another whether we should all be the same or not. Here's an interesting verse or an interesting principle here. Way back in the Old Testament, when God was dealing with the nation of Israel, and the nation of Israel was one nation, God said, I am treating you as one thing, the nation of Israel. I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to use the nation of Israel in the world. And this nation, I'm going to keep it together. And Israel is still a nation that God has been using. But within that nation, God said some interesting things. And here in Numbers, when he's talking about the organization or kind of how functionally that nation works, he says this is in Numbers chapter 2. Then the Lord gave these instructions to Moses and Aaron. When the Israelites set up camp, each tribe will be assigned its own area. The tribal divisions will camp beneath their family banners on all four sides of the tabernacle. And the point of that is this. Within the one nation of Israel, God set up very bright, distinct lines. This is the tribe of Judah. And the tribe of Judah stays within its tribe, and they have their own standard, their own flag, and they stay there. This is the tribe of Zebulun. The tribe of Zebulun stays within the tribe of Zebulun, and they're different. They're all part of the same nation, but within the nation, there were different things. When they got to the Promised Land, when they got to modern-day Israel, God set up boundaries, very clear boundaries. Okay, Dan, the tribe of Dan, is going to camp here. This is your land, and it doesn't cross over into the next tribe, which is Naphtali or whatever. For some reason, I don't know why, God set up very clear distinctions within the nation of Israel. It doesn't stretch my imagination personally to think, well, maybe he does that in his church as well. Am I saying it's God's will for there to be all of these denominations? I wouldn't say that. But I also wouldn't say it is absolutely not, and it's a bad, horrible thing for all these denominations to be there. I just simply don't know. I at least see where God did something like that in the past. So maybe, just briefly, a couple of reasons why they might be good. Why, when you look at that chart and you see all of these different denominations, well, maybe I can see where that would be a good thing. Couple, just, and again, this is my opinion, folks. Don't get me wrong. I'm giving you my opinion on why all of these denominations might be a good thing. Here's one reason that I can think of. That's this. Different denominations or different churches make it easier for people to find a church home. And that's important. You know, a long time ago, I gave up the hunger to see Cedar Creek successful in the eyes of the world. And I've replaced it with a hunger to see God's people successful where they're at. So what does that mean? Well, here's just an example. There's a couple that accepted Christ here, right there in those two chairs. I watched it happen. They prayed to receive God. They passed from death to life. They became part of God's family. They became part of the universal church. And that's so exciting. That's what we do this for. Well, that couple, over the years, I have prayed and prayed and prayed for them, but I have not prayed. You know, as people, we need to have a church body. We need to have a church home. That's how we flourish. That's how we grow. That's how God, it's like a baby needs a family. We need the people around us. We're not going to grow as Christians unless we're part of a church home. I have prayed so much for those people. Not that they would join Cedar Creek, not that they would be part of Cedar Creek, but they would find a church home somewhere. And if this isn't the place for them, that's fine. Go somewhere else, because the point is what? This group of people? No, it's you. It's you. It's you. It's that person. Different churches make it easier for different people to find a church home that they just rest in, that they groove with. Now, is that God's perfect plan? I don't know, but it's the truth. That's how this world works. And I'm willing. I tell people all the time when visitors come in here, say, we're looking for a church home. Oh, that's exciting. Well, let me tell you about Cedar Creek. But have you seen other places? Yeah, well, you know what? If you want to talk about that church down the road, that's a fantastic church. And I tell people, this town is filled with fantastic churches. And maybe you're going to really find your home across the street at Harvest Time, because they're a little different than we are. Maybe you're really going to find your home at Bethesda or Calvary on the other side of town. It's good as a practical matter. As God's people look for a place to call home, that there's different places, different feels, different thoughts, different emphases, that people can become part of. I think, whoa, Aaron, you're going to have to do something with that because I just stepped on your box. That's one of the reasons that it could be good for there to be different churches. Here's a second one. Different doctrines make it necessary for us to love each other well. I have to work hard to love Kim Buckman, who's the pastor across the street. Why? Because he's a bad guy? No, he's a great guy. He's a fantastic guy. If you met him, you'd like him. You would. You'd want to invite him to your house. But he thinks differently about certain things than I do. My job is to be a pastor. It's to teach the Bible. His job is to be a pastor to teach the Bible. He teaches some things differently than I do, and it's pretty darn easy for me to kind of take a big step this way and say, okay, you're not a bad guy, but you're not very smart. Instead, God says unity is more important than the best idea. That was driven into me years ago. Unity with my brothers and sisters is more important than being right. Is Kim right or am I right? I don't know. Someday I'm going to get to heaven and God and I are going to be talking. And he's going to bring up something that I have believed my entire life, that I have taught, I have planted my flag on this idea, and he's going to say, oh, what were you thinking, boy? That's pretty silly. I don't know what it is. If I knew, I'd change it, but I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. So, here on this earth, and this may be a shock to some of you, I will work harder at unity with Kim Buckman than I will at sorting out who's right and who's wrong. Not that right and wrong is unimportant. I'm not saying that. It is important. But I will work harder at unity. And the differences in doctrine make me make that a priority. And I think God does it on purpose. I really do. I think having these different emphases and different opinions help me. They give me a chance to have my unity be formed, be forged, and hardened, and tempered. And that's good. The world knows we're Christians by the love we have for each other, not just in this building, but across the street. That's more important than being right. So if we have differences of opinion, fine. Gives me a chance to love you well anyhow. I think, is that God's plan? I don't know, but it certainly is something that I can do now. So, all these different denominations, maybe it's good, maybe not. We certainly have opportunities with it. I want to end with one more question. You said, why so many, why so different? Well, we looked at history. Then we said, well, that explains it perhaps, but is it good or not? And we talked about that a little bit. Here's the last question. So what? I think when you talk about history, people ask that question a lot. So what? Why do I have to know this? I don't want to know about any of this stuff. I just want to go to church. Why are you telling me this? Well, a couple of practical things, I think. Here's one. Different denominations. The fact that there are so many different denominations lead me to something. And they can lead you to something. Here's the first one. They can lead me to know what I believe. I have to really stop and think, what do I believe and why? Because Kim Buckman believes something different. And it forces me to take a step back and say, all right, God, what are you trying to tell me? Why do I believe what I believe? Is that what you want me to do? Is this really what you want me to be doing? And that's a very, very good thing here in Hebrews. I like this verse. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. I am surrounded in history and in the present time with a cloud of people who have been doing the same thing that I'm trying to do. You are surrounded through history of people who have tried to say, God, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to do it? Help me to follow you. You're surrounded by that in this town. All across town today, there are hundreds, thousands of people doing the same thing you're doing, saying, Lord, what do you want me to believe? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to do it? We're surrounded by them. And in that, God has given me a race. There's a race set before me. Do I know what it is? Do I know how God wants me to run that race? Recognizing that there are different ideas, different emphases all over town helps me to take a step back and say, God, what are you trying to say to me? What do I believe, and why do I believe it? That's good. Another thing I think for me that this does is this. Different denominations lead me to remember that I'm part of something bigger. I'm part of something bigger than just what's happening here at Cedar Creek. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 9, says, this is talking about, you know, standing against the devil, who is our enemy, the enemy of the entire world. If you read through about the devil, he's making war on the entire world, and he's saying, stand firm against him. Be strong in your faith. Remember that your Christian brothers and sisters all over the world are going through the same kind of suffering as you are. I'm part of something bigger than me. It's been going on for thousands of years. It's going on all over the world right now, and it's going to go on for years and years and years to come. I am part of something bigger. Let me give you a very brief story about how that kind of played out for me years ago when I was a young Christian. I was down in Madison. We were planting a church there in Madison, and we were going to reach the campus for Christ. That campus at that time was about 60,000 people. It's big. I grew up in a town of 700. Huge, 60,000 people. When I got to Madison, there were two of us, two students. We're going to reach this campus of 60,000. And we were excited, and we were working, and we would go out, and we would preach on State Street. We would pass out tracts and magazines. We would create these services. We tried to do stand-up comedy for Christ. I mean, we did whatever. We were working really, really hard. And at the same time, as young Christians, we were studying the Bible. God, what do you say? What are you asking us to do? How does this look? Well, that on campus, There was another group. The band can kind of start to come up here, actually, as I finish this up. There was another group on campus that was doing the same thing. They were having concerts, and they would invite, you know, they'd do a concert out in the open air, and they would play and sing about God. They would pray. They would just have these long all-night prayer meetings trying to reach the campus for Christ. Same thing we were trying to do. I got to know one of those guys really, really well, kind of the leader of that group. I got to know him. And I was struck with something that I had to really wrestle through, and that was this. He believed that speaking in tongues was necessary, or no, I would say it this way. He believed that if you were really filled with the Spirit the way God wanted you to be, you would speak in tongues. He believed that. I believed that. I don't think that that's true. I don't speak in tongues. He does speak in tongues. That put me in a quandary. Because I'm looking at this guy and saying, man, if I just looked at what you're doing, you're just the same as me. You're as excited about God as I am. You are reaching, you're sacrificing, you're putting yourself out there to follow the Lord. I'm doing the same thing, and we're exactly alike, except we have these totally different ideas about this thing called tongues. What do I do with that? How do I work through that? Here's how I worked through it. I couldn't just say, well, I can't have anything to do with you because you're think differently than me. I said, you know what? We're just going to have to agree to disagree. I wrestled through it. I spent hours. Lord, do you want me to speak in tongues? Maybe he's right. So I tried. I tried speaking in tongues. And just for me, it made me laugh. It just wasn't working for me. But I was willing to explore it. And it came to the point where I just said, Lord, this is what I believe. I believe this is what you're saying about that. He believes something else. I'm okay with that because I believe he loves you, and that's good enough for me. So he and I can go arm in arm forward with this difference. I think that's maybe a good picture of how we work through this. Know what you believe. Let these different ideas and these different denominations force you what? Back to God. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to believe? And then to the degree you can, go arm in arm forward with these other Christians. Father, help us to do that. God, by your grace, I just pray that we would really truly know what we believe, and we really truly would love our brothers and sisters all across the world and across this town. Lord, help us to do that in Jesus' name. Amen.